This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hare mai, nau mai, hare mai, and welcome to Caucus, the podcast for the 2023 election campaign. I'm Tim Watkin.
I'm Guyan Espiner.
I'm Lisa Owen.
And I'm Julian Wilcox, back this week.
Welcome back.
Welcome back.
It's great to be back.
How was the South?
It was awesome, although I heard, and this might not be true, but I heard, and it reminded me actually of a quote from the great and late Apirana Mahuika, who said, "Boy, you were not missed." So anyway, with that in mind, it's great to be back.
Well, we missed you. We had to talk more. If you are watching us on YouTube this week, you'll have noticed that you can watch us on YouTube and you can actually see us this week. If you're listening to us again on your podcast app, then of course we will be there every Thursday until the campaign ends and a week after. But if you want to see us, you can go to YouTube and see us.
Tell our ear.
We're all in the same room.
We're all dressed up so beautifully for it. Hey, guys, there was a poll this week, which obviously is always a good place to get a conversation kicked off. The One News poll this week, and it really had some interesting numbers. Labour. What was the big number, guys?
Well, it had a 2 in front of it.
It did.
Must have sent the shivers up the spines.
Really does.
It was the Andrew Little trumpet sounding. When you get below a certain number, and obviously he bailed out at 24% from the leadership, didn't he? It was 24%.
The old saying, if it starts with a 2, you're in the deep doo-doo.
Yeah, so he deemed it unwinnable and bogged off. So now they're getting into territory, which is... Danger.
National on 37, the Greens on 12, ACT on 13, Te Pāti Māori 2.6, New Zealand First 3.7, top 0.6. What do you make of these numbers? I mean, National 37, they have been around the mid-30s for pretty much all of Luxon's time. They're not moving much, but that's good for them, right?
Yeah, I mean, they were up 2 and Labour down 4, so that gap increased by 6%. National have to be a credible leader of a government up into the late 30s, and that seems to be the direction that they're travelling in. I mean, it was interesting to me that ACT voted held up so well with National clearly on the rise and having some momentum. And at that level of 13%, they would be the biggest, you know, supporting partner in a government we've ever seen other than New Zealand First in 96. Mm. I mean, you've seen a lot of governments with 5 or 6% support partners. You saw the Alliance get to 11% in 1999. They were a pretty significant impact on the first Helen Clark Labor government. But up around 13%, you know, you are a significant player in any government. And I think that's going to send people scurrying to the ACT website and down the far reaches of the ACT list and to say, who are these people and what will they want?
Yeah, and on that point, so it was 65 seats that they ended up with as a combination, I think, wasn't it? So it was a romping, basically, for a start. And on your point about the smaller party in any kind of coalition, just looking back at David Seymour's comments over the last few months, and he has said ACT should no longer be seen as a small party. And of the partnership with National, he said they're going to have to be prepared to share power and be prepared to reverse policies that the Labour Party has put in place. Yeah. So he's been laying the groundwork knowing his numbers are building and holding. And I think aside from the individual numbers laid out here, the thing is the overall trend that we're seeing in all of these polls now, which is the trend is not the friend of Labour. Mm. The trend is turning out to be the friend of National. And when you looked at Labour bleeding the 4%, the Greens had only gained one or two.
Yeah.
So where's the other? Where's the other collection going?
That suggests the centre is moving right? That's the thing. So
yeah.
It's not going to the fringes.
Yeah. To be honest with you, I wasn't surprised by Labour's poll. I thought this was going to happen earlier, actually. That'd be muddled and messy. And it was always going to hit two at some point, and it's happened now. You know, I thought the Green poll shows that actually people kind of like the idea of some of the stuff that they've been talking about, particularly around dental stuff. I mean, the poll, there was a poll that said 61% of New Zealanders supported that. Just goes to show you, if you're clear about what you're doing, you're clear about your policy, you do good policy, people will support you. Mm. And that's held up. So we haven't seen a move away from left. That left has held, left has held its ground with
a
the
little
Greens.
Bit. It seems to be sliding. I just think it's sliding. I think the
sliding is
sliding
well.
A little bit. Yeah. And that's, I wonder what you do if you're Chris Hipkins in that scenario, right? He looked like he was going to try, when he came in, he was going to try and govern his way through this. Is something you were talking about the other day, Guy, and that you know, he was going to be the steady, solid guy in a difficult time after COVID. We're regrouping. He's talked this week about the electorate being grumpy and trying to recognise that. He knows that it's all about the cost of living, and that is, the polls also showed, that's the only thing people care about. But can a Labour Party really out-conservative a Conservative Party? You know, it seems to be that Hipkins... Well, policy seems to be, I'm going to be steady and conservative.
No, well,
but
that,
can you win a, can Labour win an election with that kind of?
Well, that's the problem. And if you're talking
approach.
About the poll, we tag it back to the poll. So the polling period was when Chris Hipkins dropped what should have been his big policies, right? GST off fruit and veg. And the
wheels have fallen off the supermarket parental, trolley, haven't they?
No. Yeah.
In that respect,
wobbling terribly.
$500 million a year as a policy, the big hit of the policy to launch the campaign, it's an utter dog.
Yeah.
People don't like it. No one can find anyone who supports it with any degree of economic
sort of
credibility.
I'm still not convinced by that. I know I said last week that you know, I think it is a relatively popular policy. The Labour guys I've spoken to are saying, look, it was literally, that polling was happening as it came out. Yeah. Give it a week or
but
two.
But they stopped talking
give
about
it. Give it a week or two. You know, they're going to.
It's a giveaway.
They still reckon it's going to come. They still reckon it's going to.
This
up.
Polling
29 is the bottom, and they can build back from that.
This polling was during the time of that policy and the transfer of the parental leave policy, right?
Yep.
The extra 4 weeks, the extra 4 weeks. So 2026 until you get the full 4 weeks. So those were the big, policy drops.
But does it take time for that drop to hit? That's what they're, I think Labour's
people are
hoping
paying close attention.
That they will, that this
the,
will still kick
the
in.
The other
in a
companion
week or two.
With this poll, which I almost felt was more interesting perhaps in some ways, was the graph. And I didn't print it out, which, you know, you with all your paper, I thought you might have. So there was this. This
I thought
is
there was
where
a history lesson.
No,
it's coming. It's coming.
That's later. So the poll where they asked people what the things were that mattered most to them, right? Unsurprising, the one right at the top was cost of living.
Yeah. Mm.
And it was
it was
a sideways bar graph,
yeah.
right?
Mm.
Whoop, and it went way out into the future horizons,
yeah.
right? And then underneath, everything else that you think potentially could be making people grumpy is way smaller,
yeah.
Yeah.
so much smaller. Even housing, even it's the economy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
so
it is the economy, the, stupid.
Yes, no,
and
but
it's the cost of living economy.
Yes, but they don't see it like
as
that,
the
is the perception.
Right.
So because they had cost of living and economy as two separate things,
right.
and everything under the cost of living was a tiny little bar graph.
So yes, the voters aren't upset about what the Reserve Bank or any particular macroeconomics. It's filling the car, it's feeding the kids, it's... You know, being able to afford.
It's that technical recession thing. We're in a recession now, and people go, okay, all right, but worse to come kind of thing. That's what people are talking about. You can see what Labour's game plan is, right? They're counting on Hipkins to outdo Luxon in the campaign trail. They're going to try and paint Luxon as Romney, and that's what they're going to try and do to try and get the vote back and make this a presidential-style campaign. And they're hoping that that will hit with the support, not only for them, but also drag some support back to the centre and back to him. Is it going to work? Probably not. I agree with Lisa's point about policy. I think they picked the wrong policies, led with them, didn't land. I don't think giving them more time is going to work. You know, we wish Chris Hipkins' daughter, I think it is, who's in hospital at the moment, has got him off the trial. We wish her well. But counting on him to out-campaign Luxon in a leadership-style election is not going to work.
Well, this was the number that really jumped out of me from the poll, which was the preferred Prime Minister stakes, right? Was that Luxon, we know, it's he's always been lacklustre. Luxon, people haven't particularly, but now it's ho-hum Hipkins, right?
So it's 20 and 21.
20 and 21.
Well,
Hipkins is down.
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing. That's the scenario you're looking at.
So
when
your
you talk
presidential
about,
campaign.
Yeah, when you talk about a presidential campaign, and what you're potentially staring down the barrel is two unpopular leaders, and then it really is and it always is the party vote that matters. But, you know, if you have a charismatic leader, that can swing things for you. So if we're regarding them, are they now two unpopular leaders on 20 and 21%? Then you look to the party vote and we go back to the trend and who is their friend?
Yeah. Here's the history lesson because this is...
Okay, good. I'm getting comfortable. Hold on. Let me get my cup of tea.
Grab my cup of tea. Yeah.
All right. Yeah.
So this is the low leader. So Hipkins was, you know, 7, 8, 10 points ahead of Hipkins and has come down. And we haven't seen this an unpopular Prime Minister since Shipley in 99. Clark versus Shipley, you had two very unpopular leaders going head-to-head then, right? They were both around the similar things, similar numbers. Clark was 20% at this time in the campaign in 99. Shipley was 17% at the same time in the campaign in 99. So you're seeing similar numbers there. What happened in 99? You had Shipley, who was a follow-up leader after Bulger, so Hipkins after Ardern. The government was looking in a bit of a mess. New Zealand First was falling apart with National. In this case, you've got Labour arguably falling apart with themselves. So there's some interesting comparisons there. The opposition had Helen Clark, who was an unpopular leader at the time. Luxon could play that role. So if it's 1999 all over again, Labour loses, right? That the incumbency was the bad thing. That's the interesting thing for me, was incumbency was you're copping all the blame rather than getting all the credit for it.
Yeah, I mean, your major difference there is that was a three-term national government. This is a two-term Labor government so far, but I think your points largely hold, and I would argue that the time warp of COVID has meant this feels like a three-term government.
Absolutely.
And I think if you ask people, just, you know, people in the street, as it were, they do feel it's been like 9 years. And part of that has been the fact that we spent a lot of those last couple of years, you know, homeschooling our kids.
And having the government in your living room at 1 p.m. every day.
And watching 1 o'clock presses, part of your state-mandated walk around the block. So it has felt like that. And that's probably played against them to a considerable degree. But yeah, I think your analogy largely holds. Look, in short, it's very hard to see Labour coming back from here in my view.
Yeah, no, you're right. The interesting thing for me is 3.7 is close enough to 5 now.
For Winston Peters.
For Winston and New Zealand First. And I know that we asked each other a couple of weeks ago whether or not we were prepared to put our things on the line here about whether they were going to hit the 5%. Shane Jones is not a dumb guy, and I know we're going to talk about Shane in a certain bit of video that he's done. But you can see they're going to start doing things out of the box to try and get to that 5%. Okay. It's not far away.
Let's play this. Let's see. What New Zealand First did do in terms of coalition deals was release this little bit of video this week, ruling out Labour.
In this election, our commitment to you is...
New Zealand First will not return Labour to power.
Whether in coalition or in confidence and supply...
We will not work with any party that promotes racism
and separatism.
Interesting logic. We can debate the logic till the cows come home, but we talked about
that coupled with the press release about toilets.
Yeah, yes, indeed. So that is Labour is not.
I mean, in a funny way, I mean, the question everyone's been exercising with themselves, with including our own caucus, has been what will Luxon do?
Yeah.
In some ways, it takes that decision away from him to a degree because New Zealand First is surrendering its leverage to try to get back into Parliament.
Right.
It wants to be in Parliament, not in government, really. Because if it wanted to be in government, it would use that, we could go with either side and then you go in and do the deals and ratchet it up and see where you get to. But given he, if he does get into back into Parliament, he doesn't really have that option of denying Luxon government, does he?
No, and I think that's a really interesting point about whether New Zealand First even wants government. You assume with Winston Peters and Shane Jones, the baubles of office, they love being around the cabinet table.
Yeah, I don't think they do this time.
But I'm not sure do they want to be part of a...
I think they want to be back in Parliament.
When you've been out in the wild.
To rebuild.
And just because they love it. Shane Jones and Winston Peters love being in Parliament, and that's where they want to be. They want to be back there.
They want to be part of a national ACT government that could be quite radical?
No, I don't think they do.
So the other thing, I think, to come back to the national thing, is you're right, I don't think Chris Luxon has to do anything.
Not now.
Because if he does, it gives leverage to Winston to say, see, none of these guys want us.
Right.
So we're the party for you, because everyone else has ruled us out. So I don't think he should do it, and I don't think he will do it. I think the other thing is the reason why they want to get back into Parliament is Shane wants the leadership. He wants to get back into Parliament, so there's a peaceful transition.
Winston's never going to leave.
I think if you talk to him now, and I've had a couple of conversations with him, you know, and interviewed him, I think he just wants to get in to shove it up people to say, I can get back in against all odds, and then peaceful transition of power.
He might not want to leave as leader. Winston Peters may not want to leave as leader, but eventually all of us leave.
But as we, as you know the story, the Strom Thurmond story from Winston Peters, right, when he, his political hero out of the States is Strom Thurmond, who died in Congress aged 99.
Well, I'm not suggesting that's not the way he's going to go, but that's what I'm saying. You know, what do they say? Taxes and?
Yeah.
So, you know, eventually it's how long you see the succession plan out into the future.
Do you see Luxon ruling out New Zealand First?
Well, it goes back to the point of why would you? Because at the moment...
To look strong. How about that as a theory? To make Luxon look more
I think Julian's right. That'll just give Winston Peters
more oxygen
for his, they're all against me, which he loves that. And when you look at it from Luxon's point of view, well, so what if New Zealand First get back in? Mm. Let's say they get back in with 5.1% of the vote and get seven MPs and ACT and National have enough for a majority. Then how does that worry Luxon at all? I mean, it won't worry him. New Zealand First will be happy, and they'll be sniping at both sides.
Yeah.
But so I can't see how that advantages Luxon at this point.
Yeah, and Luxon's ideal again is he wants NZ First at 4.99%.
Yeah,
exactly.
Wasted vote increases his...
I mean, that's just so people understand that. Like, so with National and ACT in that poll at 50%, right, weren't they? Because it was 13 and 37.
Yeah.
They would still get 65 seats because of the wasted vote. And on that
assuming
poll...
Assuming that they don't win an electorate.
That's right. Yeah, New Zealand First would have to win an electorate if they were at 3.7 or 4. Whatever. Yeah. Then that wasted vote, you get a proportion of that. So that poll is showing that you would get 37% of 3.7.
Yeah.
Just so people,
you get the redistribution.
You get redistribution.
On the subject of that video from Winston Peters and we will not go with Labour.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering what happened with we'll wait and the public decides what happens with the formation of government, because that's previously been his stance. Right?
Are you asking for consistency?
Just saying, words matter.
This is the party of...
I know, but the words change every time.
You know, that's not my expression.
I'll never be in a government with Mr Bulger and Ms Shipley.
Yeah, or in 2005, we're definitely going to sit on the crossbench and he was the foreign minister after the election.
But I think, you'd like a history lesson. That's a recent history lesson because, you know, normally the catch cry is... That's up to the voters of the public to decide what the lay of the land will be.
The only thing I was going to say on the poll was Māori Party at 2.7%. They want three. Because they want to drag in a very young, capable future leader of the party in Hanarawhiti Maipi Clark.
20 years old.
And we'll talk a little bit more about that with lists and stuff like that.
Well, let's actually get into the list. That's where I was going to go next, because it was interesting on the right. Michael Woodhouse, obviously, was the big loser on the national list. But he backed away from, he was supposedly said that it was because he was male and stale that he got left out. He said, no, I didn't say that. But he gave a really interesting...
He said he didn't use those words,
But he kind of, that was kind of sentiment, wasn't it?
But look, let's hear him, because he gave a really interesting interview and talked about a little bit of tension on the right.
But I think there is a challenge in getting more diverse candidates in winnable blue seats. There's also a challenge in the fact that the party vote really hasn't moved over the last year, and, you know, people are going to have to get used to the name of the 16th ranked list candidate for ACT, because they're probably going to be an MP, and 6 years ago, 10 of those 15 list MPs would have been national list MPs. So that's been a problem for the party, I think, in trying to get diversity in a static number of likely seats.
I mean, this is the thing with us Pākehā, that we love diversity until it affects us.
That's right. That's right. And suddenly you're back into needing all yourself.
That's right. This diversity's great, but not my job.
Yeah. He's interesting saying there that National has actually, the quest for diversity has ceded some ground to ACT. You know, is going to cede potentially 10 MPs, he's saying, to ACT, which is interesting.
Yeah, but to be honest with you, I didn't think it was a diverse list for National.
No, I didn't think it was
particularly... Top of Hawtaka is at 23 or something. I mean,
would expect him to be in a cabinet, wouldn't you?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And the guy, you know, considering what he did at Hamilton West and all that kind of stuff, and he's capable and very well without Māori, throughout Māori in him, you would have thought he'd be a lot higher. I mean, as I say, I didn't think it was that much of a diverse list, but anyway.
No, I agree with that. I was surprised that it wasn't more diverse, given what Luxon has been saying and given what he was saying his record had been at Air New Zealand and other.
But that's
corporate
the regional roles. Committees of National, right? And the Luxon can do the overall, and his committee can at a national level can draw up the list to some extent, but he can only use the pieces that the regional committees give him.
Yeah,
right?
But strong leaders make phone calls and nudge people and say things and get their way to some degree. I mean, so you can do a bit more than the process allows. But who knows whether he tried to force his hand more? I don't know.
I thought overall, because that is from ZB, that interview, and he was talking to Mike Hosking. And if you listened to the whole interview, there were some very telling little moments, I thought, in it. And Mike Hosking sort of asked him, and this is me summing up the words, you know, what he thought was going on with this list position. And he said, what is it? Are you too mouthy?
Too mouthy.
Are you too mouthy? And is there something else at play here? Or maybe you don't want to talk about that. Was those things were put to him where you think, oh, so what are you saying? Is there other personality clash going on behind the scenes?
When he was asked about were you too mouthy, he said, yeah, maybe, but.
And then he was asked a question where he went on to say, no, I think Christopher Luxon will make a great Prime
but the interesting comment there was he was saying that Luxon's numbers are stuck for the past year. Actually, National isn't growing, and that's clearly frustrating someone like him within National.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that cracks me up about people like Michael Woodhouse and others is if you want to be a surgeon, don't complain about the blood. You're going to get knifed at some point in politics, and that's the way it goes.
And to be fair, I guess he said that. He did say that.
At the end he said,
I've had a good time.
And he was a health accountant too, so he should know.
That's right.
Yeah, but this also brings us back in some ways to David Parker.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, and him saying, I'm not wanting to be the revenue minister anymore because I can't, you know my position on this particular policy, right? Mm. And he was criticised for potentially causing a stir around his party at a very critical time. Right?
Yep.
So then you have Michael Woodhouse, who is flapping his jaws about his list position, right when there is a sort of calmness seeming within the National camp, and they're pointing to all the missteps in the Labour camp,
yes.
And then all of a sudden you're all over the place, not using the words that you pay or mail and stale, but you kind of got the inference going on there. Yeah.
The man ban, as they called it.
David Cutler. It also brings us back to ACT. Because he said that about the 16th ranked ACT MP.
You had a look who it was?
I had a look who it is. Do you know who it is?
No. Only because I've got the list in front of me.
It's not Ollie, is it?
No. It is a guy called Rod Douglas. And if the surname means something to you, it is the nephew.
I'm buzzing in. It's you've got his name wrong. His name is not Rod.
Rob.
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 Rog. Rod. Rob.
Rob. Okay,
it's
point.
Uncle Roger to him. It is the nephew of Sir Roger Douglas, who has this year said that he might not even be voting ACT because they've lost the plot.
Absolutely, yeah.
But isn't it interesting? He grew up on a farm near Havelock North. He's in the Tukituki seat. Standing for them. So there you go. If you and Michael Woodhouse, if you need to know the name of the 16th ranked.
This would be Robinomics, would it?
But also, it goes to the point of the list, right? Because we saw ACT have some issues with its list candidates in the last couple of days.
Mm.
Does this suggest that you're talking about wheels falling off shopping trolleys, but can ACT sustain the scrutiny it's going to endure in
Probably not. But to be fair to them, I mean, I and I think other journalists were looking around at this current lot thinking, gee, who's going to blow up here?
Yeah.
And they haven't in this parliamentary term. And they've been pretty disciplined.
Yeah.
I think a lot of these smaller parties, you look at some of the New Zealand First and some of the, they've obviously dived deep into some rabbit holes to pick up some of these candidates because some media reporting about some of these, some of the anti-vaxxers that they've got on board. Look, that's my view, my choice of words, I'll own that. But there's always some fairly interesting characters in the far reaches of some of these smaller party lists, aren't there?
And even in some of the larger party lists. I mean, the matter is, for example, Sam Uffendill, right? So his selection process then came under severe scrutiny after it was found out that he was involved in a bullying incident, you would say, as a school kid. And he still was with the party.
It was a long time ago. He's been to the supermarket three times to do
since
the shopping.
Yeah. Exactly. But the thing is that it happens to all of them, and it's happened to the National Party several times, and they've had several oopsies with various candidates. That guy, what was his name? Jake Bezant.
Yes.
Yeah.
Over on the shore.
And then Todd Barclay, obviously.
Oh, there was a rogues gallery of them.
I mean, there's a rogues gallery of them. And so it happens to all of them, right? And even, I mean, you'd argue that Gaurav Sharma, who kind of went off on a tangent at one point. So they're all faced with that difficulty, but more so when you've previously been person alone in Parliament and then you drag all these other people in with you or bring them all in with you.
That's
and I can remember at the last election, after the fact, getting on the phone with the ACT list going, who are these people?
Yeah.
And we actually did a ring around to, you know, say, oh, hello, would you like to introduce yourself and tell us a few things about you? And one, I think it was Tony Severin, said, oh, I'm a crafter. And you were thinking, oh, I'm just learning about these people for the,
Well, I think this is an interesting point. The wider point is that, and we possibly don't do enough of this in the media, possibly don't do as much as we should to tell people about these lists, but you can only do as much as you can do. But I don't think people and voters look too far down the list.
No.
Do you think anyone's really looking at anyone other than Winston Peters for New Zealand First, for example, or really David Seymour and perhaps Brooke Van Velden?
Well, I mean, that's absolutely right. I mean, if you have a look, you know, United Future and the Worm, the Alliance, what happened with the Alliance, right? You're absolutely right. I think people look at one and two and that's about it. So New Zealand First, it's Shane and Winston.
Yeah.
You know, with ACT, it's Brooke and David Seymour. Mm. So you're absolutely right. The other thing, though, is interesting, isn't it, that ACT didn't fall apart.
No.
Actually, with the seven or eight or how many it had in the last term, and in actual fact, has increased it. So one assumes that they'll be able to hold on to that, but 16 people is a lot of people you only have a small party structure.
Yeah.
And I would argue for complete unknowns that some of those have actually become recognisable. There is this trend of politicians when they talk on front of television cameras that they get a row behind them of their supporting, nodding colleagues. And sometimes you're looking at the main parties and you're thinking, who's that to the left? You know, who's that?
We need a group of those in here. Yeah, don't we? No, like just nodding at sagely and wisdom.
But I would argue in terms of the ACT MPs, obviously you've mentioned David Seymour and obviously Brooke Van Velden who have high profiles, but obviously Nicole McKee, who was the
licensed firearm owners.
She's known now. Andrew Hoggard obviously is on their list.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
He's got a high profile. And then I would also argue that Karen Chua has made a name for herself speaking to issues around welfare and state
stuff,
care and social policies. So they have actually sort of got established their faces, and then they've got a few in here who have got higher profiles. So it's interesting.
No, Seymour runs a tight ship. You've got to give him that. But maybe he needs to look closer to home, because if anything, ACT's controversy this week was generated by himself.
In my fantasy, we'd send a guy called Guy Fawkes in there and it'll be all over, but we'll probably have to have a more formal approach than that.
I wince hearing that.
Mm.
Yeah, I just think he's got some good lines, as you say. That wasn't one of them. It was appalling.
No.
And I think you just sometimes you get it wrong. The joke you made falls flat or just doesn't land and is in poor taste. My own view is that was a real mistake, and he should have apologised. You just don't want to be doing
that.
He says
the phraseology, it's a metaphor more than a joke, right? That you want to go in and blow things up. People talk about going in and blowing things up. That's all he was.
You've got to think about sensitivities, though. If you'd said that on a plane, you'd be handcuffed, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, you have to think about other external sensitivities. You're not just some person in the tea room, under the zip, having
and
a
he's
little
taken exception.
Megan Woods said,
he's taken
don't
exception
have the right to have those jokes.
At Rāwhiti Waititi in the past and other comments from the Māori Party about
karaka berries.
Let's have a listen.
Rāwhiti Waititi made a comment. He made a joke about poisoning you with seeds, poisonous seeds in his karaka necklace. What did you make of it?
Oh, look, it was a bit more than that. I mean, he also said, you know, re-indigenise yourself. We've also had the president of a Māori party, John Tamahere, say ACT is the white settler party and you should go to Australia. When a political party starts singling people out by race, saying we're going to poison you, you don't belong in our community and you should leave, that's actually hateful. And I think those guys need to explain that, because if it was anyone else, I think there would be a total outcry.
It's interesting, eh? I mean, the guy always talks about people who talk about race and they're racists and things like that. The guy that talks about race the most in Parliament is him.
Yeah. Which and is he kind says of if it was anyone else, now it is anyone else.
But the other thing was, he had that argument won. Right. Well, when we talk about the issue that occurred and that welcome for the new CE or the secretary for the Ministry for Pacific Peoples, he put it out in public, got the information, you know, with Simeon Brown that talked about it, got it out in public. People were like, yeah, absolutely, that's a high cost. Eventually that payment got paid back, argument done. Then to keep going on and talk about blowing people up just shows you that there is a bit of a lack of discipline. And maybe this is the pressure of the campaign coming up, right? The guy's constantly now in the media. People are going to try and trip him up and he's just got to be a bit more careful. But I just thought it was really, actually really poor. And the other issue then was that people started jumping on top of him and talking about him in this way. And then he keeps going back to the race argument. That's his constant defence, is that though they're just talking about separatism and race, when he's the one that keeps talking about it and keeps putting it out in public and
but
when he trips up.
Does that land with his voters? Is that the point? Is that where some of his 13% is coming from? Maybe that lands.
No, it does, but he's getting new voters now, and those will be the first ones that start switching away when he starts saying things like blowing people up.
I think he's a man that chooses his words carefully, normally, and yeah. He has a lot of little quips that you think, you didn't just think of that on the fly. You put that one in your back pocket and you've been waiting for the opportunity to use it. He has little phrases and quotable grabs that he rolls out in interviews that he's got ready for when he's asked particular questions. So he's normally careful with his words, right?
Yeah.
So
I think too, getting back to the substance of what he was saying, and I think, as I said it very poorly, that he wants to scrap the Ministry for Pacific Peoples. And if you look at ACT's policy, they want to reduce the public service by 30%. So they're going to go back to 2017 levels. MB by half from 6,000, is it, to 3,000?
Yep.
Now, I'm sure there's some people running around MB who aren't absolutely mission critical. But it'd be pretty fascinating if it's National ACT government, which is the polls are telling us, and ACT really digs its heels in, there's going to be some pretty tough conversations, because that would be tens of thousands of people unemployed. And imagine the scrap that you would get into if you did actually try to abolish some of those ministries.
Well, he said very clearly, share power. And I don't know what your interpretation of the word share is. Does that mean we have a pie, you get one slice and I get the rest? Or does share mean equal? In a coalition, so I mean,
co-governance.
Like I said,
coalition or co-governance.
He's a man, as I said.
Maybe you could promote that.
He's a man, as I said, who's very careful with his words, he says that they have to be prepared to share power, and that ACT is no longer a small party.
Well, I tell you,
so
if New Zealand's
real
big change.
Stakes.
He's talking
he
about real
big
change.
Or is he saying share is an SHEER, and literally trying to decentralise and get rid of more of that central bureaucracy and get rid of stuff, right? So, which is what he's saying. But yeah, you're right. I mean, Tomo Portaga, who's currently the spokesperson for Māori Development, will be out of a job if David Seymour gets his way, because he's not going to be at the Puni Kōkiri. Yeah.
I mean, there's a whole list. It's not just
Auckland White Rail, Callaghan Institute.
Human Rights Commission was one of them that he's previously mentioned. I mean, there's a massive list. And so,
It's interesting that he, the thing of your point you're making, Lisa, that he's campaigning for real change, this thing. He must know that as a small party, you get small windows of opportunity, right? So this next 3 years, if he gets there, and if he gets 13%, and as you say, this would be one of the biggest minor parties ever, he's not going to die wondering, right? He's not going to leave anything on the field. This is like 3 years, I'm going to go for broke.
I think that's right, because he's still pretty young too.
Yeah.
I think you're right.
And he said he doesn't, he unlike other people that you've referenced earlier today, he doesn't want to go out of Parliament in a coffin. This is for a period of time, and he anticipates another career, right?
So, and I wonder, actually, and this has more dawned on me if we've been having this conversation, I wonder whether Labour is going to go for the fear factor now. And say
they've already started.
I agree.
Calvin Davis comments this
week. Yeah, but I think they'll really ratchet that up, and look at the fear of the ACT government.
Calvin Davis, you would have seen the comments, Julian. Yeah. I'm worried for Māori. What will this mean for Māori? How are we going to get treated?
Yeah.
They've already started that. What does this look like? Chris Hipkins in the House the other day saying, "What were the words? You're propped up." You're propped up by a bunch of anti-vaxxers.
Well, listen to this little clip from Chris Hipkins this week, because this, I think, painted it beautifully.
we've got a lot of work to do. Look, there's no question about this. We go into this campaign as the underdog. We're going to be getting out there working hard. We're going to be sharing a positive vision for New Zealand's future. And we're up against an opposition that want to cut a whole lot of things. And they're going to have to be a lot more transparent with New Zealanders about exactly what it is they're going to cut to pay for their promises.
We want to be really positive, but those other guys are terrible.
Yeah, and that's where people like Willie Jackson will start coming to the fore. He'll be leaning on bad cops. He'll be leaning on bad cops that will be going for the throat.
Yeah, there's no way around that, is it? It's interesting. People have talked about this becoming a nasty campaign from the fringes, but you might see the nasty campaign coming from the centre.
And they have, like I was talking about there, Calvin Davis, also Willie Jackson that same day. It was like they'd all been handed a sheet with their lines before they walked out. Words like, you know, worry, I'd be worried, I'm concerned about what's going to happen to this group of people, in terms of emphasising the negativity and the unknown of what an ACT national coalition would look like, what policies are in, what policies are out.
Well, the coalition stuff, we talked about New Zealand First earlier, Seymour is on record saying that he has ruled out working with New Zealand First if the party is given cabinet positions, but he's refused to say yet whether ACT would accept any other kind of arrangement in government with New Zealand First.
Yeah, I mean, I think you might sort of see a scenario where, National ACT had 61 or 2 or 3 out of 120, 121, and so they had a thin majority, and they worked out some sort of understanding that New Zealand First would give confidence and supply.
Or Seymour's
that's
something. Yeah. He said, my point was just that he said, he will confirm his full position on Winston Peters if the party polls at or over 5% in multiple polls.
How recently, though? Because he's been hinting. Yeah, okay.
3rd of August. Because I've got, just looking, when I was looking at the polls this week, 5.8 had New Zealand First in the latest Courier poll, the Essential poll out of The Guardian in Australia, 5.3, Roy Morgan had him at 5. David Seymour, I think your time has come. You said you would clarify the position when Winston Peters polled at 5 or over in multiple polls they have now. So David Seymour, our challenge is to you from caucus is to name it.
I think the other thing is this sets itself up well for the Māori Party. Why? Because Ngāwhiti Waititi and Debbie get a lot of coverage on stuff, and obviously this is ironic given what has happened over the last couple of days, particularly in Parliament, but anyway, we won't go there. But they get a lot of coverage out of what they talk about, particularly with David Seymour. Labour's in a dangerous position of being wedged by the Māori Party on key Māori issues, particularly in the electorate races. There'll be some really close ones, and I think they'll get even closer. The more that David Seymour becomes popular, the more the Māori Party will come in and say a lot more, which is why Willie Jackson's obviously going to be one of the front people. But I think in the Māori electorate races, this is going to be an issue that people will want to hear from. Māori voters want to hear more about how Labour and the Māori Party are going to deal with David Seymour. And at the moment, the Māori Party is probably the one that has the arguments and the line set up properly, and they haven't heard enough from Labour on that. And I think that's going to have an impact on polling day.
That's interesting. There was one interesting bit that I know we've talked about before we end. We wanted to talk about before we end, which was the cancer policy from National this week, which was really interesting. Let's have a listen to Chris Hipkins about how they were going to pay for this.
This change will reduce the cost of prescriptions, the prescription subsidy, by about $316 million over 4 years. And the majority of those savings will be used, therefore, to fund access to the 13 cancer treatments, with the remaining savings remaining in the health budget.
Sorry, Chris Luxon, of course.
Too many Chris's in the mix.
Christopher Luxon.
Okay.
But yes, so, yeah.
So taking back the prescription, free prescriptions for all, but not taking it back from everyone.
No.
So if you've got a community services card, you will get free prescriptions. If you're a pensioner and you've got a gold card, you get free prescriptions. Everybody else is going to pay $5 with it capped at $100 per whānau per family, $100. So that was the clawback, right? That basically gives them, by their graph in their calculations I'm going by, that gives them back half of what was going to be spent on free prescriptions.
Yep.
And with that money, $70 million, give or take, a year, they will fund these 13 new cancer treatments. So 4 years, $70 million a year, totaling $280 million.
Yeah.
That is the saving they are making from presenting what they would argue is a targeted approach to free prescriptions. So they save half of what Labour was going to spend, redirecting it to cancer.
I think it'll be popular. My only criticism with it is that they have named these 13 drugs right,
being
very specific about them,
preach,
which is a total obliteration of Pharmac's independent model.
Yep.
And also, utterly upends Pharmac's negotiating power. Now, you probably know, I've looked into Pharmac quite deeply over the last few years, and one of the things they treasure is their list of which drugs they're going to fund, and it's secret, and that's frustrating for people. But it means when they negotiate with a drug company, and a big multinational drug company, Sanofi or GSK or whatever, then they can say, well, we might fund this, we might not, and you know, you've got leverage in that negotiation. You think of Pharmac's position now, they've got named drugs, they're naming exactly which drugs they are.
So
if you're the drug company, right, and you produce this drug, Pharmac has to fund it because you've got a government promise. Now, Pharmac will still be independent, but really, in reality, if the Prime Minister has staked his, he can't roll this back now.
No.
So, A, you're trampling on Pharmac's independence about which are the drugs to fund. To be fair to National, the Cancer Control Agency did identify these drugs, okay. But they've named the drugs, and they've also, I think, undermined Pharmac's potential negotiation position quite considerably.
Not the first time that National has done
Herceptin,
this.
Herceptin was the name of the drug in 08, and Key did something similar. Yeah. But if you look back on that, Jonathan Coleman, the health minister, by about 2016, was saying it was a mistake to have done
well,
that.
And the thing...
And Labour, who was opposed to it at the time, then Andrew Little ended up going, you know, fund Keytruda, and they switched as well.
I mean, the difference between the two, with Herceptin and this list of drugs now, is, as you pointed out, the Cancer Control Agency has said there is research that supports the use of these drugs.
And these are the 13 that are funded in Australia and not
correct.
Here.
Yeah. Correct, but Herceptin was different in the sense that Pharmac at the time said the evidence did not support extending the period of time that you got funding for.
And they were right, apparently.
Right, so there is a difference in the sense that there is a body that has said, actually, these are the go-tos, they're showing that they are working, but I agree with your point about this is supposed to be a politically
independent
agency. Just
quickly, because Julian wants in on this too, but just quickly, they could have got that $280 million and said, we're going to ring fence that for cancer treatments
and then
leave it to them, because
that's
then
what
you don't
I was
have
an, say. That's what okay, I was yeah. going to say. But I think this is Luxon trying to paint himself out as a leader and saying this is what we're going to do, right? Now, we talked about Luxon and his ability to be able to seem to be a strong leader.
And warm. This is warm.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
And which, again, not one of his key strengths, right? So this is him trying to put himself out. This is how I saw it when I saw the press conference, was that, he's been very direct. Trying to be empathetic.
We all
and
know people have had cancer.
That's right.
This is, you know,
this is me. This is me leading this out. Yep, Shane's over here and all that kind of stuff. But this is me leading that out. Didn't take into consideration your point. And again, I think it shows sometimes that he just gets a little bit off.
Yeah.
This was also an opportunity for his health guy to shine. Shane Retty reads well in these kinds of situations. Yeah. When he fronts the press conference, he can answer the questions. Mm. You can see the doctor in him. You know, he's very assuring and all the rest of it. In terms of whether this is a popular policy or not, I think it was very interesting on Checkpoint that night when we ran the story. Absolute flood of texts and listener feedback. They were irritated, highly irritated, by the fact that taking from someone else to give to someone else in the health arena. They didn't like that at all. Even though it's capped at $100, right? Yep. You still will only pay up to $100. They did not like this, that people were being, they thought, pitted against each
other. That's really interesting, because when you're sitting there in a political party room, it could seem like really clever politics to be able to say, ha, Labour's got this really popular policy about free prescriptions. We can undermine that, right? We can be really clever and we can actually say, look, we can take this free prescription stuff and still give it to people who need it, but turn into cancer, and ha, aren't we politically clever? But you're making
massive
it a zero-sum game. It's a zero-sum game then between prescriptions and cancer people. And why should it be? Cancer, you know, it's not like the health budget is fixed. Just give it to both.
Yeah, my own view was it was good politics.
Yeah.
I've outlined my problems with the policy, but I think it was good politics. I mean, I think...
Because for that reason?
Because everyone knows someone who's been affected by cancer. And come on, let's not compare cancer with me having to pay $5. I do have to use quite a few prescriptions because I'm diabetic and I can't afford to, and I've got no problem with doing it.
Yeah.
And I don't think that you can compare that with facing terminal cancer because you can't afford these drugs. I mean, this has been harrowing for people over many years, having to go to Australia. We've all done the stories. How many stories have we done on those sorts
and this
of things?
Works out, this is 1,000 people a year that they say it will help, which works out at $70,000 a person, and it comes back to that thing how much is a life?
I think it'll be popular.
Vaping, very quickly. Popular? Was that a
desperate? Lion's got a story on.
Hang on. All right. This is a cause of irritation. So the health minister comes out, 6 to 8 weeks ago and announces some variations to the vape rules. Mm. We're not going to allow you to put a new store within 300 metres of marae or a school. Are you telling me that something has changed so significantly in that 6 to 8 weeks that you're having a second suck of the salve? You know, you didn't know the problem with seven to eight thousand vape shops.
And parents are tearing their hair out, and this looks pretty desperate.
It's the cell phone policy, sort of.
Yeah, that's what I thought it was oh my gosh, this is their cell phone policy moment. You know, and I couldn't see how this was going to work, and it didn't feel like it was well thought through, to be honest, when I heard it. But anyway,
interesting. All right, guys, we're probably out of time, so let's just take a moment, though, to appreciate the artistry that we saw in politics this week. The artist formerly known as Shane Jones.
I'm back and making Northland great again. Shane Jones, believing, taking finals to the ceiling. They came back in the iwi, oh yeah.
I mean, Trump and Brash both acknowledged there the K-back and the iwi and the making Northland great again.
He's not a great singer, but he's a better singer than Don Brash.
So, yeah, I saw a
Can we ban video. TikTok in schools as well?
I saw a video where he's talking about, oh, I've got these experts that are making this video for me. And I was going, well, that's wrong. They're not experts. I love the Teletubby, you know, I'm kind of inspired moment where he's in the hills.
It's Teletubby. Oh, my God.
I love the fact that he's singing the song completely off key, but also off beat. And as I said earlier, Shane Jones is not dumb.
No. Right.
He knows that he's battling for coverage in Northland. He needed to do something, and this is him trying to get his name out there. Trust me, there are people apparently in Tangi at home up in the north who are singing this song as their waiata after their mihi.
No.
Everyone has heard it.
No way.
Everyone has heard it. It has got out there at the moment. The man is not dumb. He's had to do something, and he's injected himself into a bit of conversation at the risk of his reputation and also at the risk of people never taking him seriously again. But he's in the conversation.
It's funny because I associate him with a different type of video.
Yeah, well, that's true. And that is caucus for this week.
Kia ora, I'm Julian.
I'm Tim Watkin.
And you can edit that. And you can edit that bit out from
there. Hell no.
I'm speechless.
That's so staying in. But maybe let's go out on Shane Jones again.
I'm back and making Northland great again. Shane Jones, believing, taking finals to the ceiling. They came back in the iwi, oh yeah. Thank you.